Media.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Hancock Whitney, with more than 120 years of experience helping clients protect the financial future they deserve, even in these challenging times. Hancock Whitney, your dream, our mission. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From across Louisiana, we're out to lunch with Peter Ricchiuti, Stephanie Regal, and Christian Mader. Peter Ricchiuti is Tulane University's Freeman School of Business Professor of Finance. Stephanie Regal is editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. Christian Mader is publisher and editor of The Current. It's business Louisiana style.
Hi, and welcome to Out to Lunch Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal in Baton Rouge.
I'm Christian Mader in Lafayette.
And I'm Peter Ricchiuti in New Orleans. As we continue to navigate the fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic, Stephanie, Christian, and I are taking a weekly statewide look at what's happening in the world of business and finance.
How's that social distancing going? Are you managing to keep 6 feet away from everybody else? How do you figure out what 6 feet is? I've heard people describe it as the length of two supermarket shopping carts or the same height as Drew Brees, if you can imagine Drew lying down on the ground in front of you.
If you're looking for a more reliable measure, Baton Rouge company Ingenuity Global has a digital solution. It's a wristband that buzzes when you're within 6 feet of someone.
If you're saying, wait, what? They've already sold tens of thousands of these wristbands at $100 each?
Yeah, Dan Ducote from Ingenuity Global is going to be joining us today to tell us who's buying them. It's probably not who you think.
Before we get to Dan, I'm sure this has happened to you. So you go to your doctor and she refers you to another doctor, a specialist. Do you know how your doctor decides who to refer you to? You might be surprised to learn that there's no established method. It's more or less like recommending a restaurant.
Now, when someone recommends a restaurant to you, it's usually because they've been to the restaurant. But when your doctor recommends that you go see a mental or behavioral health professional, like a psychiatrist or a therapist, there's a very good chance your doctor has never actually seen this person professionally herself. So what is your doctor basing the recommendation on?
Maybe the therapist is someone your doctor knows personally, or maybe she's heard good reports from other patients. Don't you think there ought to be a better way for medical professionals to find and refer each other?
And that's what Trevor Colquhoun thought, too. Trevor's company, Trusted Provider Network, transforms medical referrals and recommendations into a more medically sound and logical system. Trevor, welcome Out to Lunch.
Thank you, Peter. Excited to be here.
Trevor, Trusted Provider Network is not for consumer recommendations. As we said, it's not like a medical Yelp. It's for medical professionals only, but it's not like LinkedIn or Facebook for doctors either. So what is exactly a Trusted Provider Network, and how does a doctor use it?
So Trusted Provider Network is a closed network only for licensed professional behavior health, but also for the physicians as well. To use it and enter into the platform, these professionals must be licensed either with their, generally with their state board.
And so how many professionals do you have using it, and how have you reached out to them? How have you gotten them on board into your network?
So we have, just to get to the bottom line, we have 3,500 professionals. Most of them are in Louisiana. We started the company in Louisiana. We're now reaching out into Texas, the surrounding states, and actually probably 20 other states right now, and we'll be in 20 states by the end of the year. How they join is really a COVID story. We created for behavioral professionals virtual conferences. So all professionals need to get continuing education, generally about 20 hours a year, okay? That process in achieving those certificates ended with COVID because the face-to-face conference ability ended. We pivoted our marketing strategy and created virtual conferences and produced virtual conferences for all associations. And now we've partnered with about 30 associations across the U.S., about 20 states at this point. They go on to our virtual conference, and being part of the virtual conference, they join our network.
And Trevor, this is Peter.
I just wanted to ask another question. You got this company. You bought it. It was, I guess, based in Georgia before COVID. What did you see in the company? By training, you're an investment banker. What attracted you? And is it hard to get capital for something like this? Because people really haven't heard of this yet.
Well, capital is never easy to get. I don't care what anybody tells you. So the founders of the company, Christopher O'Shea and Jimmy Mooney, had the company based in Georgia. Christopher actually is from Louisiana. The company was focused on the treatment side and really the chemical dependency treatment side. It's a very large market, about $50 billion market in behavioral health. The entire behavioral space is about $350 billion. They identified really an issue, which is the biggest travesty in behavior health, is that people that are seeking help in chemical dependency space really have no process of finding match care. They usually use Google and they do Google searches. They go to a friend and a friend might have gone to Betty Ford and they said, oh, this works for you, but that's not a clinical match. And they were focusing on the treatment center. And really when I came in, I identified with them that the whole ecosystem needs to be involved here. You need to have the clinicians involved. You need to have the hospitals and you need to have the treatment centers in that ecosystem for the whole platform to work.
So if the idea is really that you're kind of improving upon how people can, let's say, figure out, what clinician can refer their patients or find or match them better, let's say, with a new clinic. One thing that strikes me is that we're still kind of relying on a word of mouth kind of thing. I mean, if you're putting people together and there are sort of credentials, I mean, how are we really evaluating this in a better way? If sort of the idea is that, the doctor is not going to go through the rehab clinic himself or herself. So how do we know that this clinic or this method of connecting them with the clinic is really yielding better matches?
So it's really strikes down to some simplicity. It's about match care. And we really find through historical evaluation that if you're matched with the correct treatment center based on your diagnosed issues, your recovery rates skyrocket. Right now, recovery rates in treatment centers are 15% and below. I mean, you're better staying in my third floor bedroom for 30 days to get recovery than maybe going to some treatment centers. Now, if you get matched care, your rates go above 50%. And what we're creating here is an ecosystem for professionals to work with each other, get referral, understand and see where other professionals are sending. And we are vetting the treatment centers internally to find out one real basic thing. We have a 16-page evaluation process, but the basic thing we're trying to find bottom line is what they do best and what they don't do. And what they do best is generally one thing, is we treat 30-year-old women that have chemical dependency and trauma. And that's what they focus on. So if they get those clients and patients, their outcomes improve greatly. Because what you're seeing in the treatment center is they're reaching to fill beds. These are businesses at the end of the day. And so if they can get clients that are brought to them from the tree, meaning the clinician picked right from the tree, then they'll get the better client. And the outcome of that is, their marketing budget goes way down. 30% of their revenue, okay, goes to marketing. That's a huge number, okay? And that's because they're doing Google search engine. They're paying body brokers to get these folks, and body brokers aren't bringing in the right people. And it's a horrible term, but what that really means is a well-intended individual in the ecosystem that's not a professional.
Trevor, I understand the system and such, but I gotta ask, how do you get paid?
We are essentially a SaaS model, okay? So we get paid on a monthly fee. We don't charge the clinicians for what we think is a lot, and we're not charging them till January 2021. So everybody who's coming on until we have all our feature set built out, which will be around September, we won't charge them till January 2021. We're charging them $10 a month, and we think that number is low enough to really clear the market. And if you are a clinician and you receive one referral, it should pay for itself for the year. And we're not a transactional based business, so we're not paying on transactions. It's just access to the platform, and you build out your permissions on how robust you want your feature sets. Our other source of of income comes from the treatment center. So the treatment centers pay to be on the platform. They have to pay us to be verified. The network accounts, which are hospitals who are essentially net referrers. Okay. So they discharge patients and they're trying to find behavioral health access points. There are small, without naming them, one of the smallest hospitals in Louisiana, in Uptown, discharges 2,000 behavioral health patients a year. Okay. And it's all analog. They don't have a digital process. They don't have connectivity. They're not getting analytics or anything like that. And I want to make a different point when you really think about our business, and Peter will really align to this and your users will align to this, is we really look at this business like the 70s and 80s in the financial market, kind of when Bloomberg came in, when Bridge Systems or Thomson, what we know now as Thomson Reuters, you had no connectivity, you had no analytics, and you had no data. Okay. Then Bloomberg and all these systems came in and started giving transparency, giving analytics. That's really today where behavioral health is. Okay. There's no connectivity happening right now. There's no analytics and there's no data. Okay. And so that's the bigger piece. You know, the referral process we give, this connectivity is just feature sets of what the ultimate goal is to receive, is to create this, you know, infrastructure, kind of digital railroad tracks for this market system to connect with each other. And really have a workflow dashboard for them to work and connect. It just doesn't exist right now.
You've really built all this out just since March, since COVID?
No. So we started January of 2019. What we built out in March is we went to a conference the end of February in Hattiesburg. And how we did our process, our user acquisition model, is we would basically go to conferences. We'd be the number one sponsor. We'd put our booths out there and we'd sign up about 25% of the clinicians were at the conference. So a very good rate. Okay. A very good rate. But then we kind of got a sense going to that conference that people were getting jittery and freaked out about COVID. It was clear being there. And so I looked at my COO and I said, this thing is, you know, these things are all going to be canceled or people are going to stop going to them with COVID. March 1st, we started building this entire virtual conference process. And we put our first virtual conference on in April 1st. And since then, we've done about 60 virtual conferences. We've handed out maybe 7,000 CE hours. We're scheduled to do probably four times that already in contract till the end of the year. We're drinking too much water than we can handle right now. So we're hiring and growing. It's really fun. I've never really been involved in something like this. It's exciting.
Fantastic. Chance favors a prepared mind, as they say. Trevor Calhoun, thank you so much. Trevor is CEO of Trusted Provider Network. Trevor, thanks for joining us on Out to Lunch Louisiana.
Thanks for having me. All the best.
You're listening to Out to Lunch Louisiana with Stephanie Regal in Baton Rouge, Peter Ricchiuti in New Orleans, and I'm Christian Mader in Lafayette. If you use Waze or Google Maps to get around, you're used to hearing the instruction, in 1,000 feet, turn right. Do you have any idea what 1,000 feet looks like? I do not. It doesn't really matter. You just know that it's sort of close, it's coming up, and you need to pay attention.
Now, most of us, even when operating heavy machinery like a car, don't have a natural ability for judging distances. But if you're working with other people in industry and construction, factory floor, or even school, it's now become vitally important to know what 6 feet looks like. Getting within 6 feet of another person greatly increases the chances of catching or spreading COVID-19.
Once someone in the workplace or at school tests positive for COVID-19 and you have no idea what parts of the building they've been in or who they've been in contact with, the whole place has to shut down while it's cleaned and everyone has to get tested. So it's vital, not just for health, but for keeping businesses open, that we know what 6 feet looks like.
A local Baton Rouge company, Ingenuity Global, is solving this distancing problem with a product called Proxy Halo. The Halo is a wristband that alerts a user when they're within 6 feet of another Halo wristband. The wristbands cost $100 each, and since May, Ingenuity Global has shipped tens of thousands of them to customers. Dan Ducote is the owner and managing member of Ingenuity Global. Dan, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Dan, okay, we'll get to what Ingenuity Global did before the demand for staying 6 feet away from each other came along. But first, walk us through how this happened with Proxy Halo. Proxy is a Canadian tech company that manufactures industrial wearables. So out of all the companies in the world, how does Ingenuity Global in Baton Rouge get to be the gateway to Proxy's timely technology?
When we first started, Ingenuity Global's two-year, five-month company into our existence, and one of the first products we noticed or found when we started our business was Proxy. They made a wearable that detected energized equipment in fields, and it worked real good into our industry because we do industrial automation and controls and electrical engineering services. So this wearable device kept people safe from devices that they thought maybe were de-energized that had power, and this device gave them a warning, a haptic vibration and an audible alarm and a visual light going off. So Proxy, when COVID came out, they realized that they have a proximity device that could alert others within a certain distance. So they already had a jump on how to make this device just simply using a low power Bluetooth to detect another band within a certain distance. So this was, they just saw an opportunity to help protect people, and they already had the technology somewhat built. So we were a natural fit because we already had a good infrastructure of customers that were familiar with the Proxy band that detected the energized sources.
So you all basically just sort of made the transition it just had to adjust the technology. How did it work?
Yeah, so the company started adjusting the technology and realized their capabilities, and they would kind of give us lessons on what the capabilities could be. And we started reaching out to our customer base and to their advertising saying, hey, if you have a group of people that you need help in this contact tracing or social distancing, we have a solution that we can provide. And it's simple. It's always on, always aware. It takes the guesswork. When you're planning to go back into business, when we were all at stay home under the stay home order, and then we were allowed to go back into the business under the phase two, it gave us an opportunity. Sometimes when you're working, you're not aware of your surroundings. So this device is your protection. If you're too close, it gives you that vibration. And when maybe if you're in the middle of a task, and you're not paying attention, this reminds you, hey, you're a little too close. Keep that social distancing.
So I'm really curious about how this plays out in real time with an employee, you know, on the factory floor or whatever the case may be. I mean, you know, I got to imagine it's one thing if I'm getting close to a device that I shouldn't touch, right? Maybe it's electrified and it could kill me. But, you know, people might be walking by each other a lot. I mean, is there any flexibility in that so people don't just get annoyed, you know, to the point where they're saying to themselves, like, hey, I know I was 6 feet, you know, within 6 feet of this person, but, you know, it wasn't that long, right?
I think the biggest key is they're aware of it. You know, when you're in a normal day, you forget about what you're supposed to be doing is, oh, am I 6 feet? Am I 4 feet? This device tells you, hey, you're a little too close, and you're going to instantly move away. So it just makes you aware of your surroundings at all times. It's not foolproof. You know, people are going to maybe get annoyed, but it's going to make them conscious of, hey, am I too close to this person? Do I need to remind myself to stay 8 feet away or stay even further away? It's just a kind of a training tool that'll help them make those decisions when their mind may be on their work or on their family back home or whatever. It just helps them be reminded to stay that safe distance.
Dan, this is Peter. I know you're not medical folks, but this contact tracing, do you all worry about HIPAA regulations?
This captures no personal data. So the device is just numbered, and it really traps no data, no personal information is shared between people. It just detects when bands are next to each other. There's nothing, you never use that information. The only time it's used is that if at some point you were unfortunate and had an employee or a coworker or something that would test positive or showed symptoms, then you can go back and look at the history of the devices and see the duration, the distance, how long that they were exposed to another band. So none of this information is shared or used until there's a positive test, or until you need to determine who was in that boundary of that person that could be infected within that certain time frame.
So, Dan, you all have sold tens of thousands of these. How are you getting them out there, and how do you get even more of them out there so that everybody will be wearing one?
Yeah, the demand is really outworking the supply right now. We have a lot of people just by word of mouth from hearing that there is a solution out there. You know, there's other solutions like your cell phone, which takes personal data into that plate. But when we're talking about word of mouth and industries and just telling, sharing with the people that, hey, this is a device, very low cost. The company Proxy decided to make it a very low cost because they wanted to protect people. This is not something that they have to maintain a subscription to. It's a one-time cost. It's delivered to their door. It's easy to set up. We work with the people to get it going. So it's just really word of mouth that's been able to get this message out there.
So who are the customers that are buying these things?
And that's what really surprised you. We have universities. We have laboratories. We have financial institutions, small businesses, manufacturing facilities, chemical plants. You know, anybody that has a mass amount of people that they want to protect, that they know that there may be times where those people, there's so much interaction that they have that could be an issue. But we sold quite a few and have a lot of universities been inquiring about them. And maybe not for all the students, but for their faculty and for their people, their inner, maybe the maintenance staff and everything. Could it work for all the students? Absolutely. But then you get into, I'm not sure if universities want to foot the bill for every student to have one, but it would absolutely be a great atmosphere to remind the students to practice that safe distance.
Dan, what about the fact that, you know, you mentioned you're a salesman by trade. You've got this product that's very hot, and there are competitors, and you want to get there first. What is it like selling in this environment? I mean, you're probably a guy that used to come over and, you know, shake people's hands, and now you're onto Zoom. Can you do it?
Yeah, it's really easy because people understand the concept, and people want to protect themselves. And so it's very easy to demonstrate. It's very easy to show. We have screenshots of what they actually see behind the scenes when the data is captured and how you would use it to see who is exposed. So it's very easy to show. And it's simple. The product literally takes no input from the user. They put it on like they would put a Fitbit or a wristwatch, and they just go by their normal day-to-day functions.
Dan, is anybody else doing this? Is there any competition right now for this, or is this proprietary? Have you patented it or trademarked it?
Well, again, it's not our product to patent, but the Proxy, I'm sure, is working on things that keep certain information for them, you know, and only them. But I know there's stuff like cell phones that you can do stuff with iPhone and Google. There, all those big players are doing things. I know on the last update on your iPhone, you believe it or not, you can look at some of the settings. And if you go to settings and privacy, and there's an indicator on there that a last upgrade allows this to be turned on if you wanted to do social distancing, or you could see who you were exposed to. So there's a lot of people doing it. This just gives a very, very smooth, clean installation of something that does not have any of your privacy information or your data as an individual tied to it at all. So very safe, very protected of that individual that's working.
Dan, I can imagine one thing is that as a business person, this is very exciting from a cross-selling point of view, isn't it? I mean, because you were in these places for industrial automation, safety. Now you're in there. You're going to be in some new markets just from the product. That's got to potentially be huge for you.
Yeah, we have some really innovative products that we is kind of our claim to our existence with our company is their first to market leading edge technology. So Halo has given us an opportunity to reach into some other industries and be able to showcase what we do. And most of our products are used in any type of manufacturing and chemical plants. And so even universities use a lot of our products. So this is a perfect fit that we always like it's a lead in. It'll help us get into businesses that maybe we couldn't have touched before, that now this is such a well-received product that once we're in there, we can share what else we do.
It seems like, you know, they're kind of, there's an emerging social distancing product market. The idea that that there are different tools that maybe might have applications possibly for a long time. I mean, are you guys looking at other opportunities to bring products to market that, you know, maybe they're not doing this specific task, but, you know, remind people to wear masks? I don't know, like trying to figure out other ways to bring things into the workplace that kind of help keep people on their toes about what they ought to be doing in terms of minding their social distance or just, you know, heeding caution about the pandemic itself.
Yeah, great question. The whole wearable industry is exploding. You're going to be able to do in a few years from now, that whole wearable is all focused on safety and what it can do. Right now, there's so many different devices that all do specific or individual functions. It could be O2 monitoring in a plant. It could be all this different gas detection. It could be wearing it for if a person goes down, they're working alone and they're not moving, as far as a GPS locator of a person, and notice that this individual hadn't moved in a while. So you have all these individual devices, wearables, that are doing so many different tasks that I think you're going to start seeing some of these companies merge some of these technologies together. So where you'll see one device doing multiple things, I think that'll come up. And we pride ourselves in doing this industry 4.0 thinking, this innovative forward thinking. And that ties a lot of this into that. So where you're going to see a lot of safety technology, a lot of social distancing, a lot of typical hazards that you would see in any type of facility, this is going to help you protect it.
Dan Ducote is owner and managing member of Ingenuity Global. Dan, thank you so much for joining us on Out to Lunch Louisiana.
Thank all of you. Appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us for this edition of Out to Lunch Louisiana. We edited these conversations to fit into the time slot here on your NPR station. You can hear longer versions of these conversations wherever you normally get your Out to Lunch podcast. If you're not an Out to Lunch podcast subscriber, search for Out to Lunch, Out to Lunch Baton Rouge, or Out to Lunch Acadiana on your podcast app.
At some point soon, we're going back to hosting Out to Lunch around the lunch table. For now, Commander's Palace in New Orleans is closed, but you can have a wide range of ready-to-cook items shipped from Commander's Palace to yours anywhere nationwide. Information is at goldbelly.com.
Our Lafayette Out to Lunch restaurant, The French Press, is open at 50% capacity, and you can get delivery through Waiter or Grubhub.
In Baton Rouge, Mansur's on the Boulevard is open. They have 50% occupancy, and you can get pickup. Out to Lunch Louisiana is a production of INO Broadcasting. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical director is Eric Merle. Photos from this show on our website and social media are taken by Jill LaFleur. I'm Stephanie Regal in Baton Rouge.
I'm Christian Mader in Lafayette.
And I'm Peter Rusciutti in New Orleans. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you back here next week for more Out to Lunch Louisiana.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Hancock Whitney, with more than 120 years of experience helping clients protect the financial future they deserve, even in these challenging times. Hancock Whitney, your dream, our mission. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com.
Harpistry, an eclectic mix of harp-centric world music, Mondays at noon and Sundays at midnight, right here on KRVS.
On the next Arts of Space, the darkly passionate ambient sounds of Latin America, with music by Oscar Reynolds, Incuyo, Trio Garufa, Gustavo Santaolalla, and more. I'm Stephen Hill, a program called Romantico, on the next Arts of Space.
Coming up later tonight at 11, here on KRVS.
This is listener-supported public radio for Acadiana. KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Like us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.